Yes, sir.
All right, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is season 4, episode 7 of Chatcast. Today, I'm here with the King of Memphis, a member of the legendary underground rap group 36 Mafia, Mr. Project Pat.
Pata.
Yeah, man. I'm hoping this works out good. We're just going to jump right back into what we were talking about, if that's cool with you.
No, that's cool. Yeah, I grew up in North Memphis, man. And North Memphis is like the inner part of the city. Like, Memphis is like an apple, like a round apple. So it would be like north of the core of the apple. That's North Memphis. And North Memphis is cut up in like 30 to 40 neighborhoods. The neighborhood that I grew up in was a housing project called Cypress Garden. It's right by a neighborhood called Hyde Park, and right beside Hollywood, Hyde Park, Hollywood, Springdale area. And back in them days, man, people were selling powder, Dilaudids, pills, selling syrup. You know what I'm saying? People like, you know, that was selling cocaine, was snorting cocaine, and it was a lot of it was a lot of drugs going on, drug running going on. And I was a kid then, so, you know, like I said, it was He-Man and G.I. Joe and fighting 2-3 people on a cheese bus, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know, it was, when I was a kid, you know, it was what it was. As I got older, though, I fell in line with the rest of the neighborhood, with the crack hit the scene, and, you know, selling a crack in my hand. Wasn't no big crack dealer, but, you know, I mean, I done had the dope before. It just was that type of neighborhood, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, everybody trying to get over on you. You know what I'm saying? Everybody trying to slick you.
Right.
You know, first time. I want to say, first time I ever bought drugs was like 16, turning 17. And I bought into this was like buying into a big deal for me, which wasn't no big deal for real. But yeah. The guy tried to slick us on the drugs because he was older than us. He was like 4 or 5 years older than us. And man, it turned into my partner shot him in the side of the head. He was finna shoot him in the head, but he moved his head to the side so the bullet scraped the side of his face. And then my partner shot him in the stomach. And he tried to execute him. He had 2 bullets in the gun. He tried to shoot him, kill him execution style. But what ended up happening was the guy, you know, he got away, he lived. And after that, the guy started shooting on him. And, you know, he knew, we just stayed out. We stayed clear from the dude. But the dude crossed us on the dope. We gave him the money. He gave us half the dope. Said he gonna give us the other half. He never did. He crossed us, but he ends up shooting on us.
Damn.
That's how the neighborhood was, you know. I knew a guy in North Memphis. He had, if he had 4 or 5 bricks, cocaine bricks, keys, right. 4 or 5 keys of cocaine, if he knew you had a quarter key, he gonna come kick your door in.
Damn.
Literally. Because he was just that greed. We used to call it the North Memphis greed. Like, he can't, it's never enough. Like, you know, North Memphis dudes like that. They, once they see you, they can be having, but they see you having, they want what you got still.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm not that old. I'm 25.
Mm-hmm. And, for sure.
You know, throughout my lifetime, you know, I've heard about the crack epidemic, and it seems like it's been kind of like, glamorized a little bit into make it look better for movies and TVs and a better story or narrative.
You get not to cut you off. Let me tell you something now. You had people like them TVs, like you see on TV. It was people like that, but everybody wasn't like that. You had certain ones like that. Like nobody could be the man. You know what I'm saying? Nobody. You know what I'm saying? But now I'm gonna tell you something now. But far as like in my city, neighborhoods. Oh, you ain't going to somebody's neighborhood selling no dope. You get killed like that. That's something that did not happen. That did not happen. Not in the north side. Now, out toward like neighborhoods where the crack was new, like on the deep south side, like Whitehaven, back in my day, dude, they got a lot of low income apartments out there, and dudes would be selling dope. And I was out one time on that south side, and a dude said, I said, man, who are them folks? And he said, man, I don't know. I said, they serving over here, ain't this your neighborhood? He said, yeah. See, that we didn't do that, like, you know what I'm saying? Like in my time. Now, it was certain neighborhoods out there where you couldn't do it in, though. Cause I know I was out there in this one neighborhood on that south side, you know, Whitehaven. They were, man, I forgot the name of the two lanes. Now you couldn't just go over there selling no dope. Nah, you couldn't do that. No, you couldn't do that. Nope. Mm-mm. Nah. You couldn't do that over there. You couldn't do it like in his other Walter Simmons projects. That's out east though. But it's southeast. You couldn't do that either. No, you wouldn't just been to be posted up selling dope, just no anywhere. But like in North Memphis, like ain't no way you was selling no dope, like coming somebody else's neighborhood. And you know, the neighborhoods be close, but you ain't finna walk over in their neighborhood a few streets over and start selling dope. I mean, you might, what happens is, you know, if the junkie come from there and come over there, okay, that's different. But if you can't go over there and stand on it, no.
Yeah,
no.
You can't move the product. They have
to. No, you're gonna get killed like that. You don't. That I ain't never seen it. You know, if somebody did it in my time of growing up, I never saw it. But yeah, it was bad, man. That crack era. Like I'm gonna tell you this. I put it to you like this. Like the crack. Reason why the crack was so huge was because it was so addictive. But the high didn't last long. Like you know how a person. Well, I know you know about crystal meth. See, now in Memphis, they got the glass going on. They call it glass. Now, crystal meth, you stay high a little longer from what I heard than crack. You stay higher. You stay high longer, but you know, at crystal, you can make it. So, you know, it's so much of it, you know, once they get their hand on the stuff to make it, that they make so much of it. Like, you know, they sell it. They stay high. But the thing with crack is when you get that one blast, it only going to last about maybe 10, 15 minutes. You got to have another one.
Oh, yeah. My that's grandma used to call that chasing the dragon.
I was going to say, that's what it came from. That's what people say. You're chasing that first high. You chasing it because you're getting 15 minutes of it, and you're like, dog, you came right back down. See, that's how they did the crack. The crack was cocaine. It was modified. You know, and with the modification on it made you get a blast, like, wow, you up, then all of a sudden you right back down. You got to go. And that's why the crack was so, the people was chasing the high. Right. So when they chasing the high like that, they ain't got time for work. They ain't got time to pay no fee. They got time to sell anything to you just so they can get high. See, the thing with the crack, too, the crack, people wasn't, you know, like heroin, you be sick on the heroin. But the crack, they wasn't sick like that. The lot of, man, I'm going to tell you something, man. Now, the crack is addictive. It's addictive to your body, you know, body addiction or whatever. But it's got something to do with the mind, too. Because, because, see, like, I knew this dude. He hit a rock, and he said, man, I hit a rock. I never was wrong. See, and I feel that in a way because you know how, I don't know if you ever, you know, man, when you young, you try this, you try that. Yeah. You know, I ain't never messed with no crack myself, but I tried a little something here and there, and it just didn't do nothing for me. It's just like something simple. I'll tell you this, like cigarettes. I smoked some cigarettes. People smoke Black and Miles. I smoked Black and Miles. I just thought it was a waste of money. I was like, no. I had a pack. I used to buy them and smoke them, but I was just trying to be cool. I stopped doing it because that's just a waste of money because I don't smoke. It don't do nothing for me.
Yeah, I think with substance abuse and stuff like that, it definitely depends on how your mind's built, you know.
You got it. Yeah.
A lot of people, like, rely on it. They get a little taste of something, and they have to live the rest of their life with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sad, though, man. It was a bad addiction. I ain't going to lie. I seen women who had good jobs, making real money, kids and everything, man. And I'm talking, stand on the corner, man, ready to get on their knees, do whatever. You like, that's crazy. Women in church and everything, man, like church women, like, but they tried it one time and they messed their life off.
Took their life over.
Oh yeah.
Man. Yeah, I was just curious about that because, like I said, I've never seen anything like that personally. I've only been to Memphis a couple of times, and like I said, it wasn't in the 80s. That was before I was ever even thought of. But I have been to Atlanta a lot. I used to pretty much live in Atlanta.
Okay.
So I got to see, I stayed, I wouldn't necessarily say live there, but I stayed on the weekends there for like 6-7 months at a time and then come back and forth from here through Chattanooga. But yeah, that's another story. So outside of that, let's segue into what got you into rapping. What made you wanted to be an artist, musician?
Well, my brother was selling. He was a DJ. Jay was a DJ. He was a DJ for different little pods. You know, high school, different little pods. The city. And what he used to do is he sell mixed CDs, I mean, not CDs, tapes, at these stereo stores. We had like mom and pop stereo stores, a lot of them in Memphis. People used to sell these little mixtapes. So he had got hot in the city, so he used to like have a new, say he got a new tape going to drop. Well, man, he'd ride around for like maybe two, three hours at the most, and he'd drop off tapes to the stereo stores, and they'd pay him. They pay him wholesale for the tapes. Man, one time, man, he dropped, he had like $24,000,
$26,000
in a day, like in a few hours.
On tapes?
On tapes. And when he did that, man, I was like, wow. I said, man, this like dope money. I said, man, you rolling. He was like, man, I'm telling you, man, you need to start rapping, man. You need to start rapping. I said, all right, cool. So then that's when I started doing it. But see, the thing with me was, I had started rapping after I got on bond for a robbery, and I had like a year, maybe a year and a half, and man, I had to go in and do that time. So, and my rap career wasn't too long.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not very familiar with the timeline, but this is like before the Kaze thing.
It's before that.
Okay, because I was just wondering what the two, if that or like your brother's involvement with 3-6 Mafia, which of those came first, and like kind of who you were, who you started recording with.
Well, I started recording with Paul and them as soon as I got out of jail. That's what I was on their robbery, and I got out on their robbery. That's when I started recording.
And So how long after, like, did it seem like things took forever back then? Because I know now you can put a song out on the internet, and it might not be real life, it's just the internet, but that you can feel and look a certain way, like you've got all this money. You've got all this money. Did it, what was that process for you like?
Well, back then, it was easy for us because we were with Relativity Records. And you used to have street teams that would go out in the neighborhoods and pass out little snippet tapes and snippet CDs and stuff like that. But see, now they don't have to do that because they got this internet up rolling. So now it's about the blast and stuff like that. And man, you know, you can just go viral. But like back then, the only thing about it was this. So they didn't have music you could stream. So they didn't have Apple, iTunes and all that. They ain't had that. So you had to go buy the, people was had CD players, so people go buy the CD. So man, people used to go buy the CDs, man. And I'm talking about, man, you put out one song, your whole album going platinum.
Really?
Whole album going platinum. You know, I went platinum in like 7 months. I went platinum in 7 months, and I was locked up in the jailhouse when I went platinum, like Tupac. When he had went platinum, he was locked up. I was locked up in prison. Damn. I was locked up in, I went to the feds. And when I got locked up, I had got locked up for 7 months on a pistol. And when I had got locked up, I had went platinum.
the album had scanned platinum. I had sold 1 million records.
Who gave you that call and said, man, you just went platinum?
Juicy did. I had called him. I was locked up. And he said, man, you scanned 900-some thousand. If you scanned 900-some thousand, that means you platinum, because it's stores at the time that didn't count scans, the mom and pop stores that sold CDs. So you sold over 1 million. If you sold 900,000, you sold like a one. You probably sold 1.5 or 1.2 or 1 point, maybe like 1.1 or something like that. You are, you know, 1,100,000. You already sold it because they had other mom and pop. This is United States of America, and it was being sold all across the world. But mainly, they counted everything in the States first. And right. I had sold 1 million in the United States. Yeah, I had sold 1 million on Mr. Don't Play. So. I mean, it was very shocking to me. I didn't even know, you know, I just made an album. Like, you know, we were trying to get people to get on the album at the time, you know, people that, you know, features and all that. If you listen to Mr. Don't Play, I don't have one feature on there. On people I got on there is our people. And I sold 1 million because we had reached out to them, but really Paul and Juicy them did. And they was like, we was going to pay them. They took their time. And I said, man, forget them folks. I said, I don't need them. I don't need them at all. I said, man, look, because I really wasn't studying because it was holding my money up. Waiting on features will hold your money up. You know, you got to get the album complete. People was talking about sitting out, man. I had got like 200-some thousand, man. Like, I ain't got time to be waiting on them. I need my money. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Yeah, forget them. I came in this game for a bag. I ain't coming in this game for all the other stuff, man. I said, look, if I do the album, is they still going to pay us the money? He said, yeah. Do we need the features? He's like, well, you know, it'll make the album go, man. Forget that album, man. Set that money out. So I just went in, man, and it was really more than 200 because, you know, the company had to get paid. So it was like maybe 350 or five, you know what I'm saying? Part of them had to get paid. So, but man, like, you know, it was all business, you know what I'm saying? And man, I made that Mr. Don't Play album, man, and it sold 1 million in 7 months. So I got a blessing out the situation.
1 million in 7 months, man.
1 million in 7 months.
Let's see. I had it down somewhere. So was this with Juicy's label, him and Paul?
Yep. Hypnotized Man.
Hypnotized Minds. Mm. What other artists that we would know of came out of there?
Gangsta Boo, 3-6 Mafia came out of there. Paul them didn't sign nobody. They didn't sign nobody else. They didn't sign nobody else though.
And they were just an independent thing. They were never like.
They was major. You know, because we were Relativity in Columbia. Relativity in Columbia, yeah. Loud Records, yeah. We were Loud Records, yeah. Gangsta Boo came out with 2 albums with them. We were rolling, man. We were rolling. We had a bag, man. We was getting to the bag. I ain't gonna lie, it was real nice.
You know, thinking about the independent thing, you know, how there's a lot of people who stand tall on that, you know, not signing with a major or whatever. I mean, to each his own, however you choose to do it is how you want to do it. But when I think about your influence and those guys you just talked about, the people you were around, a lot comes to mind. The 2 things that stick out is your legacy along with your influence. Like, you guys seem to remain underground. You came up underground. Had I not looked into it a little bit and known that you were associated with Columbia, I would have never known. I thought you guys just built it from the ground up, not to say you didn't.
No. I'm going to tell you something. We did. We was with Selecto Hits Independent, Selecto Hits out of Memphis. We used to sell out of Selecto Hits first, and then they went with Columbia. And what they did was, we were independent. We weren't signed with Columbia. We had a record. We had a record company deal with them. Like, they was our distributors, and they paid us most of the money. So we were independent record label.
Okay.
Because, you know, we put the money up to do the record company would front us a budget for everything. But we had to operate everything. You know, we had to pay for the studio. We had to pay for the videos. It came out of our money.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So we were independent, But we were only doing that because at the time we got $7 off every CD and we got $5 off every tape that sold.
So the distribution was only through Columbia, nothing else.
It was through Columbia, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Nothing else, no.
I was never signed
as an artist to them, no. I was signed to Hypnotized Mind, and Hypnotized Mind signed everybody else. And Hypnotized Mind was distributed by Columbia.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, it was major, though. We were independent, but we was major because, you know, because we wasn't like people in other areas. Like, people back then in New York, they'll just sign, you know, and they, you know, they just wanted a deal, which I feel them. They didn't know no better at the time, probably. But down south, you know, we always been – down south, we had time to study the game more.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? In that time. So when we studied the game more, we like, hold on. Man, we can get our own record company. And see, you know, you pay attention. Notice how when P. Diddy had his own record company and Jay-Z had his own record company, everybody in New York was like, oh, my God, that's just huge. Well, they have to understand something. We had the same thing like they had. And our dollar went longer because right. They live in New York City. You got to pay up there. Our mm-hmm. dollar down south always going, it's going to always outrun you, outlast your dollar. So that's how we, and then we also was doing at the time, we would get independent albums through Selecto Hits, which was distributing us too. And the majors wanted us so bad, they didn't even care about the other sides of, they would their Smokehouse Music. They would call it Smokehouse Music, and they throw something out. You know what I'm saying? Like the 3-6 Mafia Underground tapes, the Project Pat Underground. And man, I was getting a bag off that. We was eating two times. It would be like stepping on the, like they used to say this back in the day, stepping on the drugs twice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be like stepping on the dope twice.
Man.
Yeah, we was getting good. We was getting good. Like I ain't trying to be funny. Like to be honest with you, like. We was with Selecto Hits, and Paul done made millions upon millions of dollars. I got rich off. I still get a check from Selecto Hits now. So imagine that. You know what I'm saying?
And it's like, got to be this what, day. 20, 30 years.
Yeah, to this day, I still get a check from Selecto Hits. And stuff that Selecto Hits put out is still streaming, and I'm still getting money off the streams. Like they changed it over to streaming too, so we getting money off of that too. So,
man, yeah, it just goes back to that legacy thing. You know, you guys, your influence in the South, that's one of the main things. That's why I brought up the record thing, because that's one of the main things that I've noticed about a lot of the independent labels that came out of the South, like the
No Limit or
Cash Money.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, it's just something different about what comes out from here, you know.
Well, the South, one thing, like I say about the South, man, you know, a Southern person, man, you know, when you're going, okay, it's just like this, man, you know. You go in them little towns, you know what I'm saying? You know how them old country dudes be. Like my granddad of Mississippi, like, he was like that. My granddad always had his own business. He always, because people back in the South, they're not too quick to just spend their money. They're not too quick to just, you know. That like we like hold on, let me if he can, you know, if he could, we, you know, a Southern person will learn a trade and then they open their own body shop or something. They don't you know, they're not trying to, you know, they I'm a small little body shop, or I'm a small little bakery, or I'm a small little, but they gonna always have good quality of what they doing. One thing about Memphis is that it goes all the way back to Stax Records. See, Memphis, you know, Memphis got sold. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I if a person asks me this, I can prove it. Because if you look back at Stax Records, Stax Records was had a lot of, you know, guy's name, bald head guy. He sing up there. There's a lot of old artists came off of Stax Records. And then after Stax Records, you got 3-6 Mafia came out, this, that, and the other. But now, if you look, it's 2021, look what you see, who the hottest rappers in the game. It's Memphis rappers. And Memphis rappers going to always come up. People in Memphis going to always come up far as when it comes to musical talent, because Memphis got soul. See, Memphis one of them cities that a lot of people don't know this. You know, WDIA is the first black radio station in Memphis. So back in it was only like three major black radio stations. It was WDIA, it was one out of Harlem, and it was one out of coming out of Atlanta. And that was it. You didn't have no other, you didn't have no other station, unless maybe you had one in Chicago or Detroit or something. But other than that, you can Google it. Memphis had one of the major, and then, you know, it's like, these is areas, you know what I'm saying, that, you know what I'm saying, like, they always had them people singing. You know, W.C. Handy was from Memphis. I don't know if you know about him. Yeah, W.C. Handy, he's old school jazz. He from Memphis. W.C. Handy used to live in Memphis, play in Memphis. W.C. Handy from Memphis. So it's like, you know, it go back even further than Stax Records. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
B.B. King, you know what I'm saying? Like, B.B. King from Mississippi, but he came to Memphis and got on. You know what I'm saying? He came to Memphis and got on. And like Memphis, if you look at them old, if you look at them old pictures that show the South back in the days, mm-hmm. you always see people, the black people always say, I'm finna go up to Memphis. Because mm-hmm. see, Memphis was popping back then. They say they this is what they used to say. If they in the South back then, they would always say they was going to Memphis. They ain't never say nowhere else. They said, so where you look? If you you go back to them movies like where you see black people back in 1920s. Black people back in the 1800s, they always go to Memphis because the Memphis, like I say, it's always been that area of, you know, they had Beale Street back then. Beale Street was a street that people used to play jazz and blues on. Yeah, I'm talking about heavy and a lot of gambling going on. Beale Street was really a saloon street. Yeah, a lot of saloons on Beale Street where they played music. Everybody got high and drank and kicked.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So see, that's what I'm saying. Like, and see a lot of that come that soulish type stuff, a lot of that come out of Mississippi. And so, you know, a lot of people like you may not know this because you being from their way, but everybody in Memphis got kin people in Mississippi. Everybody in Memphis got kin people from Mississippi. All our grandmamas, mamas, and great grandmamas and uncles and granddaddies, all of them come from Mississippi. So Memphis, really, to be honest, Memphis is a type of city down here right now. You catch dudes in the street, they see Mississippi tags, they don't trip on Mississippi tags.
Okay.
Yeah, Mississippi is like, we accept them. We see a dude from Mississippi, he cool. But now I'm gonna tell you something. I'm being honest. I'll tell you this. You can ask anybody from Memphis what I just said. I don't care who you interview or who you ever meet. You can meet somebody regular. Ask them, do Memphis people mess with anybody other than Mississippi people that come out of town? No, sir. If they catch you with some old kind of tags, it's finna be a robbery. That's how they get down here. They don't mess with people. Like, don't be from some bigger city. They think you tough. So they finna go in on you. Yeah, that's how they is down here, man. And then people here, one thing about us, we gonna know you ain't from Memphis. Like, we just gonna know.
Right.
Because, see, Memphis, we got a swag. You know what I'm saying? We got a whole swag. We got a whole different swag. Like, we know you ain't from me. I'm talking about, you could be, check this out. You could be from across the bridge. Real talk.
Yeah.
You could be from Mississippi right across the line. We gonna know you ain't from me. Because we gonna know how you talking and how you move, how you say certain words. We gonna know you ain't from here. They gonna say, oh, you ain't from here. And you're gonna be like, oh, no, nah, I'm from such and such and such. Yeah, we can tell you. Hey, we gonna know. And like the thing about Memphis, I'm gonna show you something about a lot of people, okay, like a Memphis person can mimic a person that comes from up north. We can talk just like them, but they can't talk like us though. See what I'm saying? Like
yeah,
we could say, yeah, man, and what's up, son? You know, we can switch it up if we wanted to. But they can never come to Memphis and talk like us. If you ask them to say what we say, how we talk, they can't do it. They can't do it. And I'm going to tell you this. It be people in the South same way. They can't do it. They can't talk like us. We can talk like anybody from other places, but they can't talk like us. See, that shows originality. People would downplay it back in the day and say it was country. Yeah, it is. But it's also originality. And one thing about down South, that's a good thing. Everybody down here, people up North and people on East Coast don't know this. if they ain't never been down here, everybody don't talk the same and don't move the same and don't act the same and don't do the same stuff.
No, no.
No, sir. No, sir. You know that. You from down south. We don't, a person from Tennessee don't act like a person from Alabama. No. They don't even talk the same.
A person from Nashville doesn't act like a person from Knoxville.
It's totally different. Yeah. It's totally different. A person from Memphis don't sound like somebody from Miami. I mean, I'm gonna be real honest with you. You catch a dude from Memphis or meet somebody from Miami and think they from another country or something. They'd be like, what you is? What? they wouldn't even know. They'd be like, huh? Cause see, you know, I'm just saying, like, you got certain areas that Memphis will relate to. We'll relate to Atlanta, you know, Atlanta. But at the same time, Atlanta don't talk like us. No, they don't move. New Orleans and Memphis ain't the same. No. I mean, it's all love, you know what I'm saying? You know, but at the same time, they not us, and we not them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, that's why I made sure to start this off every time with telling them who the king of Memphis was, because you definitely have that originality about you. To kind of steer this a little back into music, what do you think the height of your career was?
Man, Mr. Don't Play or Chicken Head when it sold to me.
Oh, yeah. I have something to tell you, actually. Okay. I talked to a friend of mine's, just a friend of mine. I told her who I was doing this.
Hello? Yo. Still recording, but I don't hear you.
Is that you or me? Post connected.
Okay, I can hear you now. Hello?
I lost you for a second, man. I'm not sure when.
It was about when you said you had somebody that you said you was telling me you was interviewing me. I heard that part. Then just the phone just went out.
She just said she's been keeping the whole chicken head movement alive.
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah. But yeah, I could imagine. I mean, seeing that, and then, you know, this interview is about you, but it seems like your family, you know, just between you and your brother, you guys are greatness. Your brother has a lot of achievements of his own.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, the thing with my brother is he, you know, Jay always wanted to be a rap star, whatever. He used to make, DJ, but he first he wanted to just be a DJ, because back in our day, the DJ would get all the props and be the man. But then he started trying to deal with certain rappers, and they would go to jail and juvenile when he was young, so he just said, forget it, I'm going to do it myself. And he was smart to do that.
Right, yeah, I mean, look at him now. Let's see. So I'm trying to think about where we go from here. So we talked, you know, your music career, Memphis. What was if you don't mind me asking?
Oh man.
How long was the prison stint, like the Fed time that you did?
Man, I did four flat. I did four flat out four and got out. And that was really the longest bit I ever did. I did like two and some change on a robbery, but I did four flat. And man, I'm gonna tell you something, man. After about that third year, them walls start getting closing in, man. I said, I gotta get up out of here. Man, look, I can't go back to jail, man. I'm not doing that. No, sir. I mean, I was in there with people, man. I'm gonna tell you the sad part. I was in there with people that had deceased on their outdate. Deceased. The outdate is deceased.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, I hear stuff like that and I'm like,
yeah, I promise you, man. Bad business.
I couldn't even imagine, you know, being in there and you're scheduled to get out 2075.
Yeah, man. I'm talking about it's sad, man. We don't even got to talk about all that, but we can't if we want to, but it's sad, man.
Yeah, it is.
There, man. It's people in there that are old guys that's been in there since the 80s.
And they would really, I'm being, when I say that, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not like, you know, say, man, how can you be a good judge of character like that? Man, I can read people. I've been around people for so long. I can read a criminal. And these people were criminals. But after about 10 years, they got to change the heart, man. And they ain't getting out till they dead. And they would give their right arm to be free. And it's sad, man, because they ain't never getting out. Because I guess it's just the extent of the crime. You know, I'm not even, I'm a realist. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I know for a fact that you don't have to get all this time to people that they could, you know, change whatever. But I'll say this. It's just like you walk in the store, and if it say it's for $5 or you can't walk out with it, if you pay the $5, you got to walk out. I mean, no. It's like a deal. You know what I'm saying? And once a deal is made, a deal is a deal. And I mean, you know, I hate it for people, though. They need to change the laws, I believe, because I know for a fact, man, people want to go home and ain't even like that. And especially a lot of them older guys. But it's sad.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the drug laws need to be reviewed and looked at and changed. I agree with that. So you still there?
I'm right here.
All right. I was going to ask you next. What was 2020 like for you? I know you probably get a different answer from anybody, but.
No, 2020 was blessed, man. I'm going to tell you something, man. It was, right now is the best day of my life, you know what I'm saying? But 2020 was one of the best years of my life, man. I have to admit, it really was, because I didn't have no shows or nothing. I mean, you know, they shut everything down. But I say this, I got a real better closer, stronger relationship with God. And I had a lot of time on my hands, man. I did a lot of working out. Man, I think I lost maybe 30 pounds, you know what I'm saying? Oh, so, wow. Man, I'm working out right now. I mean, I've been good, man. I ain't gonna lie, I've been blessed, man. Like, I had a lot of different business opportunities too coming to fall in my lap. And man, I'm cooling. I'm super cooling. I ain't gonna lie, man. I bought a house in right before the pandemic hit. Didn't even know the pandemic had, you know, was hitting or nothing. Bought a house right before the pandemic hit. And, man, I mean, super straight. Super straight, man. I'm talking super good.
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go with part two. If you guys didn't catch the first part, which you will, it'll be all edited together nice and smooth. I'm here with Mr. Project Pat. He was just telling me. Yeah, he was just telling me about how last year was one of the better years for him he ever had. I asked how his 2020 was. He said he lost 30 pounds.
yeah.
You were working out. And then after that, I lost you. So we can pick up where we left off, I guess.
Yeah. No, I was just saying, man, I got a real nice, better understanding with God. I got closer to God, lost 30 pounds. And, man, I've been working out and doing little dumbbells and riding his bike. And, man, I've been eating real healthy. I stopped eating meat in 19. So I ain't been eating no meat. I just been eating, like, you know, fish here and there. I just been working out, man, staying focused. And, it's been a good year for me, man. 2020 was good.
That's good to hear, man. I'm glad. I felt like it was that way for me, too. It wasn't, I mean, all things considered, you know. But it was definitely a year of growth for me. You know, I started a new job, got myself into some better situations. So, yeah. So you're just vegetarian?
No, I eat a little fish every now. I don't put no title on it, man. I just don't eat no meat, chicken. I don't eat no hot dogs and turkey. I don't eat none of that. I just mainly do a little fish here and there and vegetables. That's it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I do smoothies, workout, run. I mean, not run, but ride the bike. And, man, I just, you know, stay on it, man. Stay focused, man.
Do you have any – so, something about, I don't know, just your aura and the way you've carried yourself makes me think you've got, like, an entrepreneurial spirit – in you. Do you have any businesses or anything you're working on?
Yeah, I got a you know, I got this, me and my partner got this foundation going. We finna go get it completely hooked up and started. It's called the Go Foundation. We mainly, it's a Christian-based foundation. We mainly, you know, go out in the community and, you know, spread a good word or whatever. And, you know, help out. We help out the homeless and, you know, people at the homeless shelters in different cities. And we just kind of got started maybe like a couple of months ago. But I've been doing that thing right there. Me and my partner got we got this food truck, and we finna get ready to set some situations up to where we can put it on a franchise market. And I'm finna start selling this clothing line. I'm finna do this clothing line, and it's gonna really pop. It's this clothing line I'm finna do. We'll start out with some shirts maybe and some I want to do like shirts and maybe some socks or or something, you know, just, you know, it's a clothing line I thought of.